We're about to do a podcast that five people will listen to.
I'm about kicking ass.
Wow.
I'm about taking names.
Wow.
I do keep names. Little bit faster. And if you don't feel it yet, you will. I'll promise you that.
Who's your daddy?
Welcome to episode 6 of Pi Radio. This is Grub Dog. I'm joined by Bill.
Yep, got my dragon energy in here.
Oh, got your dragon energy. Is that from last time or is it a new one?
I think this was a half-open can that was sitting in the back of the fridge for the past couple months.
Okay, I'm sure it'll still be right. Extra flavor, maybe. And also joined by Deg.
Hiya.
And Matto.
You.
Pro Daisy.
Hello.
And Rabical.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, so it's good to have everyone back here. It's the Pi Studio's looking a bit better this time, less cobwebs.
Didn't have to dust it off as much this time.
And hermetically sealed, which is important, I think.
Perfect for me, because I've been here for months.
Were you the one who was doing all the cleaning? We locked you in last time afterwards?
Yes, I don't know why you guys locked me in. It's been kind of hard.
I thought you left.
I was looking for cable scraps.
Oh, so you had the first half of that dragon energy that Bill's
basically.
Oh, no.
Does that mean you were hiding when Bill came in and then you just kind of appeared to make it look like you hadn't been staying there the whole time? Just kind of shuffled out of a closet somewhere.
Yeah,
hey,
it's very,
it's
very hard to keep my bodily smell in check.
Oh, well, you smell just fine. from here.
TMI zone.
Appreciate the cleaning as well. You can get our all our Patreon money for the month.
Yay.
Making the big bucks.
That's where the big bucks start rolling in.
All right, so I'm going to start off just by talking about games that I've currently been playing. So I believe some of you guys have been playing Snack World.
Yes.
Who wants to talk about that? So I haven't played it, but it looks pretty fun.
I feel is overproduced, and I love it for it. It's they put a lot of effort into a dungeon crawling game.
In terms of graphics or gameplay?
Oh, but overproduced means it's probably spent a lot of money on like the voice acting and the actual like localization writing. They probably didn't have to, but they did anyway because I don't know. I guess level 5's localization editor is the guy that basically set the tone of the Dragon Quest game since 8. So it has that flavor to it. Like,
do you love some puns?
There are
so many puns.
What sort of game is Snack World? Like, it sounds like some sort of mobile match 3 game.
If you've played Fantasy Life for the 3DS, it's basically the same kind of game.
Yeah,
you got all sorts of different weapons and you explore, except it's a little bit unlike Fantasy Life where it had more of a sprawling overworld. Snack World, you have a hub, and then you
randomize dungeons.
Yeah, go to randomized dungeons, and
a bit better than that collect, than usually when people think of randomized dungeons. But yeah,
basically a loot dungeon crawler, and you use that loot to make more loot and weapons and upgraded armor sets and stuff like that.
And follow along with the silly story,
which and it has a seriously.
It has a Pokemon esque like partner system where like you just collect random monsters and they follow you as buddies.
Okay, yeah, how many of them do you have at a time? Is it just one or do you get a party?
I think you can get three.
In the single player missions you'll eventually be able to carry up to three. While in the multiplayer you only have one. It's the room leader that carries that one extra partner in.
Much like Monster Hunter, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So do you have abilities that you use in, like, the gameplay, like to move rocks or whatever, or are they just, like, for... no. fighting.
It's just, it's kind of basic action RPG fighting.
Yeah.
And every, in all the, each weapon, there's like, gosh, I mean, we've already come across like probably 50 different kinds of weapons that fall into different classes, you know, swords, daggers, axes, wands. And each, you can get the same kind of weapon, but it'll have different special abilities. Like you can get an axe that does like a dash and attack move, or it can, you jump up in the air and you do a downward swing move, or it's a charge up attack. So you can, you can be having this axe for a while. You find a new one and you're like, oh, this ability, I like it a little bit better. So you end up switching it with that one, and you can use those other weapons to upgrade your weapon into a more, slightly more powerful version. So there is a little bit of strategy involved in terms of what one you want to use, and if you're going to sacrifice the one that you've been using for a while to power up the new one that you got.
Some enemies are weaker to certain weapon types, you know, so you're constantly changing them.
Okay, so if you find one with like a cool ability that's really fun, that you can still keep it and level it up or something. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And
the game does not take anything seriously.
Yeah, you carry up to like 6 weapons at a time. And you're constantly switching between them, like, because each enemy type is strong and weak against certain types.
Okay, and so you guys have been playing online as well. How's the online
aspect of it?
Yeah, online's been pretty stable for the most part. Very quick in and out. Missions are fairly quick, and depending on it, really, you can make it as quick as you want, because some of the dungeons, like, you can, like, you'll have like different floors, and they'll usually be set into 3 different floors for the dungeon ones. So you'll, like, you can be walking for like 10 seconds and find the exit to the next floor. Or it could be the very last turn that you make, where you're spending like 10 minutes like exploring like a dungeon floor before you actually find the exit. So it can be pretty quick or slow, depending on, again, your luck, so to speak.
Are the dungeons randomly generated?
Yes. Well, yeah. Yes, I mean, the layouts are. And you do 2 floors of those and fight a boss.
Okay. So is it, in the online, is there any kind of gesture that you can spam just to communicate?
Yes.
Yes. There's lots of gestures. You actually buy the gestures using a specific item that you can find. It's called a pixie penny or something like that. A pixie penny.
Does that cost real money, or you get it in the game?
No.
Okay. No, you get it in the game. It's like you have like a smartphone type thing that you use the gestures. And that's what it is. The pixie penny is basically the smartphone's money, basically the mobile app payment thing. So, but yeah, no in-game purchases, thankfully.
Okay.
Yet.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think we're gonna jinx it.
You're gonna have to pay for the ending.
But yeah, it's one of those games where it's like, it's not amazing. It's a serviceable action RPG that has just enough quirkiness to it that it's hard to stop playing. Like, and it has a decent loot dungeon aspect to it that makes you want to be like, oh, I have like 10 of these, or one of these.
Okay, like, sounds like a nice combo.
Like, Deg Pro and I have been obsessed over, like, there's this like little idol group that's in the game, and like you need a specific meet and greet ticket, like, to talk to them. So we're like, oh yeah, we got a meet and greet ticket, so go and use it. So it's like it's silly. It's absolutely
Bill's
silly.
Bill's been obsessed over that, a specific character. Peter Pancake. Oh
no, Peter not Pancake. Peter Pancake. Peter Pancake.
Oh yeah,
Deg, you are the one who was posting
that name.
Peter Pancake
art silly,
earlier.
Be ready for a torrent of silliness in this game. It never ever takes itself seriously.
And some terrible homosexual genies.
No,
that's the teenies.
No, the The story is very tongue-in-cheek. There's a quest you take for a bunch of slimes, like Dragon Quest slimes, and they're all angry that they have a legend internally that they'll become metal slimes if they get defeated 10,000 times or something, or 1,000. And they're all angry that adventurers move on from fighting slimes once they level up. So they all just kind of block the road and print and protest. And someone comes and beats them up.
Demanding to be beat.
Yeah, it's demanding to be beat. You will not be moved. You know? It's that kind of silliness.
That's kind of what you need in a loot-based game like that. Just a bit of personality and story to keep it going.
Oh, definitely.
It has to have person, because if it was like a standard story, it would be way less interesting, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. We wouldn't be playing as much as we would have been if it were generic.
Snack World is a multimedia franchise, so there's also a Crunchyroll debuted 3D CG anime about it as well. The three main characters in that are characters in the game, but you get to create your own. So it's sort of like Pokemon, where your character's not necessarily Ash Ketchum, but you have parallel adventures. It's kind of like that.
Oh, yeah, you still channel your inner Ash Ketchum.
They're there, and you interact with them, but you don't have to do anything later.
Right.
That's cool. So, who's been playing that? You've been playing that, Pro? And Dagan Bill?
He's playing it right now. I'm
sorry. In a second, I will. But along the lines of the writing, I was taken aback because I did not expect the amount of cringe humor that the game revolves around.
Yep.
So it is not typical fantasy, and I was surprised by the cell phone integration of all the smartphone interfaces and the motif that you have in for basically what's basically the menu system. It's modeled after the phone. Luckily, it's smoother than Monster Hunter, God Eater, and Damon X Machina, sort of all I care. So it's very easy to work on your character and just keep moving forward while enjoying all the quirkiness of the story that comes along.
Yeah, agreed.
Cool. I'll definitely plan on playing it at some point. Hopefully you guys aren't super overleveled by then, but
too late.
We'll see.
Well, I've been also playing it too, and yeah, they are like at level 30.
When did I start playing?
Oh, 40 now.
Oh.
Just in the period of this podcast.
Oh, well, yeah, ten levels off.
Right. Two Sundays ago is when I first picked it up, and we're now crossing 40. So that's almost a nightly playing. Yeah.
I'd be playing it more if my brother was stealing the Switch all the time to play the Weeb Emblem. So I took your Mirage session.
The other game that I've been playing on the side when we haven't been playing Snack World is Rune Factory 4 Special, the port from the 3DS game, which is a good port. It's a game that it's not aged very well visually, of course, because, again, it's a 3DS game. It looks a lot better on when you're playing in handheld mode versus when you're playing on a big screen TV, but game still is solid as it was back then. They've added some extra scenes and whatnot. Basically, it's more just a refresher to get people to say, hey, remember Rune Factory? It's been, I think 2013 was when the original came out, so it's been 7 years.
This is leading up to a new one, isn't it?
Back in the series. Yes, mm-hmm. Rune Factory 5 will be coming out later this year, at least in Japan, probably not here until next year, but it'll be really nice to see what it'll look like. In case that anyone listening has no idea what Rune Factory is or forgot what Rune Factory is, it's basically what is that other game that you like?
Harvest Moon or Boku no whatever.
No, No, Stardew Valley.
Stardew Valley.
The good one.
Again, it's a Harvest Moon game with a focus on dungeon crawling and action. And so, like, that's why Harvest Moon, again, if you like farming and that's all you do, you do play a Harvest Moon game. If you like exploring and you want to just have the farming be a little side thing on the side, Rune Factory is the type of game for you. So if you like Stardew Valley and you've never heard of Rune Factory, definitely give Rune Factory a look. It has a little bit more of a Japanesey feel, of course, versus the more Western-y feel of Stardew Valley.
Cool. So,
Move on.
Okay, yeah. I've been playing the last few days. I've been doing raids in Pokemon, and they've added a new raid with Mewtwo, which is it's been really fun because it's the first raid in the game that is really, really difficult. And so the first couple of times I did Mewtwo. it's level 100. It's EV trained. It has 6 moves instead of 4. It's like really OP. It's like,
that's cool.
Yeah. And so you need to get 4 people with good Pokemon. You need to be on point with strategy. You need to heal a lot. And it's way different to all the other raids in the game where you sort of just want to get through it and beat it and get the rewards or catch the Pokemon. But yeah, with this Mewtwo raid, it's much more about, it feels like a boss fight, I think. And it's been pretty fun just trying to
defeat Mewtwo. It's a giant level 100 Mewtwo that's EV trained. You're making it sound like you're fighting against a hacker from like the old days, like one of the first like online Pokemon games. You'd just be in an online fight. Here comes the hacked Mewtwo that's level 100.
Surprise!
Has ridiculous stats.
Kind of does have that feel like that kid in high school who had 6 Mewtwos in his team. Is like, hey, everyone want a battle? Like that kid who would go up to like someone who just bought the games, like, want a battle?
Mm-hmm. But now,
sadly, I know what you're talking about.
You can bring your friends to help gang up on the
hill. Yeah, so and take down the evil. And you get like lots of really good rewards for it, like 20 XP candies and bottle caps, which are pretty hard to get in the game. And so it's kind of worth it for that. And it's just fun seeing what people do. Sometimes you get like really bad battles, but it's still amusing to see what people bring out. And
bring out my love this take on Mewtwo.
Well, guess I'll die.
Yeah, good thing about it is like you don't really lose anything if you die besides like 20 minutes of your life. But
20 minutes are very important.
It's been good fun. And because the Pokemon DLC, there's going to be a lot more legendary raids in the DLC, so it's kind of a taste of things to come as well, which is, I think, a nice direction to have difficult raids. Yeah, besides Pokemon... go ahead.
I was going to say, when's the DLC coming out? When's that scheduled for release?
First one, I think, is June, and then the other one is a bit later in the year.
Oh, okay. So I thought they might have had something, you know, lined up for Pokemon Day, as they call it.
Oh, I think this is what the Mewtwo Raid was for.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Kind of what they did. And they also added the Kanto starters to the game.
Yep.
Which is, you can find them in raids, but like they don't have their own Pokedex entry yet. But you can still...
more Kanto pandering. Ugh.
Gen 1 or Earth.
Gen 1 or Earth.
Get well, the they're fuck there, out, they added. You can also get them through Pokemon Home, which is something I also got, just to transfer my old Pokemon.
Let's see.
Get the free version as well? Like, there's a free version of that?
There's
right?
a free version, but like... you can't really do anything with it. You can't transfer from the 3DS game if you have the free version. I just bought a month of it for a couple of bucks just to trade them all from the 3DS game. I did a little write-up on that as well if anyone wants to know specifics. But
The free version is essentially nothing. It's
it stores about 30 Pokemon.
Yeah. I mean, who only has 30 Pokemon?
And you can only transfer from Let's Go, I think.
Yeah.
It's a good way to get Mewtwo, I suppose, but besides that, it's just the Kanto starters, and the rest aren't really able to be traded to Sword and Shield.
The online trading on Pokemon Home, is that only via the phone app, or is that on the Switch as well? Because this is where I was getting very confused when I tried to load it up. There seems to be, like, they're quite different.
Okay.
Yeah, good question.
I haven't actually tried to trade, so I don't know. Yeah. I've been a bit scared because when it came out, there's if you got a hacked Pokemon in a trade, then it would crash or something. I think they fixed that. But yeah, with random Pokemon trades, it's like the Wild West. You never know what you're going to get. You might just
get
your game bricked.
You're going to get a Magikarp, but you're going to like it.
Well, who else wants to talk about what they're playing? Because I can take over.
Yeah, go ahead, Rab.
Yeah, all right, so just the other day I bought Bloodstained, you know, released in a very buggy state, but I've been playing that, and it seems to be more or less playable now. I've been really enjoying it.
That's good.
The only glitches I've been encountering, and they're almost comical in how silly they are. It'd be like in random dialogue boxes, like a whole word would just be missing. The dialogue was, you know, something, you need the key to unlock that safe. Like, just the word key would just be blank on the, but the voice actor would still say it. So it would just be.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, how did they miss that? Or is that the wild bug that's being generated by the game? Who knows?
The flavor text, the dialogue, are there colored keywords? Because it could be a colored keyword that's being removed because it's like.
I don't think so. Sometimes it's a word at the end of a sentence. Sometimes it's a noun. Sometimes it's an adjective. It doesn't seem to be. There doesn't seem to be any logic or reason behind it. I should take a screenshot next time I see one because it seems to come up. Every few dialogue. Trees or so.
There could be some valid lore reason later in the game where someone's been stealing the dialogue and you got to.
The lore in the game is mostly forgettable. It's a good game where it's like they went for style over substance, but actually they end up with good substance and the style, like the aesthetics of the game are just all over the place. The game, it doesn't look as, I guess, coherent and as artistically, like, you know, a solid, you know, like it doesn't seem to have that coherent artistic vision that the Castlevania games on DS and GBA and all whatnot had. It's a little more, it's a little bit lost. Each areas don't really seem to join up with the others or whatever. But all that said, the game plays really well. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm only 2 or 3 hours into it at the moment, but it's a really solid game. I think they went a bit overboard with like there's like a million ingredients and stuff and resources to collect. Yeah, like there's a crafting system. It seems like it's not necessary at all. But I mean, and so what? I mean, the gameplay loop I tend to be in is I wander around exploring, finding, you know, surviving till I find save points, eventually running into a boss, dying, and then just kind of grinding that area. Not even grinding, but then for something different, making my way back to the crafting location. There's a few sort of warps, but they're pretty hard to find. And then just, you know, upgrading all my stuff and upgrading my abilities and then going back and taking on the boss. So that's sort of the gameplay loop I'm in.
It sounds like a classic Castlevania loop there.
Yeah, it's very much more it's basically a Castlevania game. The way it's structured, the way it feels is very Castlevania. And you know, people use that, you know, Metroidvania term, but you know, a game like Ori and the Blind Forest feels a lot different to this, and you know, Hollow Knight and they feel quite different. And this one feels just like Castlevania and not like Metroid. I've also been playing.
Cool.
What you're struggling there, Bill? What's up?
What? Bill? No, I was. What?
No, I heard someone groaning in the background.
No, there was no groaning.
No.
It was Craig. It was a groan. Don't worry about it.
Groan.
Well, the other, I mean, you know, I'm worried about, you know, the groaning and worried about people's ill health. I was inspired to play, to pull out the old Plague Inc. I think it's probably a 10-year-old mobile game now, but it has a resurgence every time there's a global health crisis. And I've been playing that on the iPhone. That's been a lot of fun, creating, you know, different viruses to just wipe out humanity. Or sometimes
you create the viruses in that game, do you?
Yeah, it's great, fun. And you have to sort of like, you get like DNA points so you can evolve your fungal spore or your bacteria, whatever sort of type of virus it may be. They all have slightly different abilities, and you use them to say upgrade. You might make it resistant to hot temperatures, or you might make it a bloodborne virus or one that's transmitted by animals, and you keep sort of upgrading those, and then you can work on your symptoms or make it more resistant to antibiotics and stuff. And so it's the sort of the gameplay loop of that is, I mean, the technique is you want to try and spread as much as you can without people realizing it first. So don't worry too much about symptoms. But
so you want to have really malicious intent with this.
That's
game.
Right. Then you got to ramp up the symptoms and start, because once you start killing people, like humanity tries to like cure the virus, and that's really, you don't want that.
So then
you can either sort of play defensive and try and work on your antibacterial resistance, or, you know, make the virus more complicated. Some of the symptoms like might be paranoia or seizures, which make it harder to cure, or at least the patient's less likely to seek treatment. Or, of course, you can just make it super deadly and a target rich countries to just try and kill off all the scientists. That's another sort of, you know, technique to beat the cure. Yeah, it's great. And there's all sorts of sort of twists on that. But certainly the coronavirus outbreak, I think, you know, really, and they've got a big thing on their website, on the Plague Inc. website, like, no, like, yes, every time there's a big outbreak, you know, there's a surge of interest in our games. Please remember, this is a simulation and you should be listening to your health authorities. What to do? Yes, there's a few people out there, you know, turning to video games.
Just in case there's a few people out there like training to be bioterrorists, it's like, no, please don't. Please don't spread coronavirus.
So for some reason, I thought that game was about containing viruses, not.
No. It's about spreading.
I might be thinking of something else. Okay.
That's like claiming I was going to say that's like thinking that Grand Theft Auto is about finding cars and bringing them back to their owners.
That's what I've been doing.
That's life experience. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you don't drink that Corona beer, should be fine.
Oh, do you know sales of that Corona beer actually went down because of coronavirus? Like somehow people linked it.
People are stupid as hell.
Yep.
I'd be drinking more Corona beer just out of just
you know, alcohol can stop.
Go down in price.
Rub it all over your body.
Oh.
Well, they say alcohol kills germs, so.
Well,
so to parlay into that, we wanted to talk about how we think, you know, coronavirus is going to affect gaming and video games, and we've already had GDC be cancelled. Now, I haven't been following that too closely. Who knows?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
Except for one thing, I didn't talk about the games I played yet, perhaps.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, to add to it, yes, I've also been playing The Snack World. As Bill Digg and Pro have said, it's a well done thing. It has its flaws, I found. There's one in one particular, I think some of the characters are good except for one character in particular, the genies. I don't have like it's a bad gay stereotype. And I think what they were trying to aim for is in Japan, there was, I don't know how long ago it's been, but there was a really popular comedian did a character called Hard Gay. And it was basically like a variety thing where he went around in public and did funny things. It it wasn't as bad as it seemed. It was quite, I thought it was quite funny, but these genie characters, I was like, oh my god.
It's like, similar they to made Sasha, me... a hard gay, similar to Sacha Baron Cohen's Bruno character. He's basically like an over-the-top gay stereotype. He gyrates at people, basically makes them uncomfortable. That kind of thing.
It's that kind of thing. Nothing.
So the genies in the game are play on that. Is it?
Yeah, they're a play on that, but they're like, but they're really annoying, and sometimes their dialogue is just uncomfortable.
Yeah,
but other than that, the game has had its charms. Flaws, I think some of the difficulty, especially in the single player, is a little bit uneven, or it's probably just me being sucking at video games, probably the latter. but other than that, it's a quality action RPG dungeon crawler. And if people like that kind of game, they should go. They should try it. The other game I've been playing is Rabs did with Ritual of the Night. I've been playing a game called Hollow Knight, and. Oh.
Very nice.
That game, it's been out for a while, but I've been trying to finish my backlog, and this time around I really got into like the game itself, and it's like a Metroidvania game with a bit of Dark Souls elements. So when you save, all the enemies come back to life, and if you die, your like soul is wandering around where you last died.
Yeah, and you have to get it back. Like,
you have to get it back. There is another option where you don't have to go through all that, but overall, it's easy to see why it's one of the most popular eShop games on the Switch. It's visually great. It's one of the best 2D animated games I've seen in years. The music is fantastic.
It's great. It has a great atmosphere.
It has a really great atmosphere, and It controls wonderfully as well. It's like, if no one hasn't gotten it on Switch yet, please do, because the sequel is coming out this year. And
yeah, very highly anticipated.
Silk Song, which is
I got to play a bit of the sequel at PAX.
Oh, yeah, that lucky you. I want to play that demo. The character in Silk Song is one of the boss characters in the game, and the bosses in particular are actually really nice. The one lingering thing, the one flaw I do have with the game is how you heal. Like, unlike Dark Souls, where you get like your potions and such, the only way you heal is if you like do a focus, where you like hold the A button and you get your health back, like one little piece at a time on your health bar. During boss battles, this can be a bit of a make or break, because the boss battles in this game are so intense.
Like, they're very aggressive. So if you stand there and try and heal, you're probably gonna get punished for it.
Yes,
isn't that the same as how if you use a potion in Dark Souls, it still takes a few seconds and you can still get hit? So it's not too different in that respect.
It takes considerably much more time to heal
Another thing that I think people will be reminded of is Paper Mario, because there is a badge system that helps with collecting items and attacking.
Yeah, you can customize that a bit. So I think there's also one badge that makes you heal faster. So maybe if that's your playstyle in the bosses, you can put that on.
I haven't gotten that badge yet.
Oops, spoilers, my bad.
I have to find it.
Actually, I think that might have been pretty early, so there's a lot of things you can miss in this game. It's a very rewarding game to explore.
There's a ton of stuff to do, and I want more people to play it. And that's about it.
I loved it, but the bosses were painful, and I lost several years of my life stress over playing that game.
Bosses are quite difficult.
I know Bill's favorite boss. Someone that goes, that guy.
Oh, is it the dung beetle boss?
The dung beetle, yeah.
The dung beetle. Oh, God, the dung beetle. Oh, God.
Gotta love the designs, though, and that voice has a lot of charm.
Oh, yeah.
the whole Wicked like great. Sound design is really good in Hollow Knight.
They speak in a sort of way that you can sort of finish in your head the way they would say the words that they do by the little voice samples that they have. You know, you don't have to say everything. You can just say a couple of things, and it's like, something like that. You know.
Yeah, you can finish my dragon energy.
Animal Crossing-ish stuff, you know. I like that stuff. People put too much emphasis on, like, you know, these have full voice acting or something, and that's not necessary.
Yeah, sometimes that just sort of blocks your imagination. It's nicer sometimes just to have their own voices that doesn't have to be in English.
It's like, oh, you're Lowenthal again?
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing against the guy. He's a good voice actor.
or what was that guy that was in everything? And what's his name? Nolan North. Yeah, that guy.
I was going to say Troy Baker. Yeah.
Troy Baker, him too. I mean, they're talented, but you know, you don't have to be in everything.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to hear them in Hollow Knight. It would just be a bit weird.
I will say some of the voice actors are really good, and they also appeared in Kingdom Hearts Uprising, which is one of the Nintendo's best voice acting games.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I think voice acting suits that game a lot more because of the narrative.
It's just a Star Fox game. Shh.
Mm-hmm. I know, since I'm now done talking about my games, let's talk about viral outbreaks.
Okay.
Back on the important stuff, coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that one of the symptoms is we get a crown or something.
Oh, sounds good.
So
we're talking about GDC being cancelled, which is, has that ever happened before?
Unless it did during World War II.
I don't recall that happening. No.
Now, good thing here is like they haven't completely cancelled it. They've delayed it basically. They're going to bring it back a bit later in the year.
But I mean, what are people doing at GDC that so like, you know, makes it a vector for viral transmission? Is everyone just like kissing each other or something? That doesn't seem like a GDC sort of activity.
I hate to think there might be racist intent, or because, you know, a lot of the game industry is Asian.
I think a lot of it is travel.
It's travel related. Yeah, it's basically any convention that is gonna where you're in like attracting an international crowd is basically what they're trying to prevent. So I mean, I don't think there's a racist intent. I think it is purely, I think it's overly cautious, but again, you can't blame them for that.
I just hope that's not what they're doing, you know?
So it kind of is like, I mean, everyone's not kissing each other there, but there's like a lot of people trying to meet contacts and make deals and like get publisher interest and stuff. So like, that's kind of what GDC... It's a big part of it, like the social networking aspect.
Directly, so that may be another concern.
Yeah, and there's people flying from all over the world, and I guess for some people, they don't want to get a disease in the U.S. and deal with U.S. healthcare.
Where is it held in the U.S.?
Where is it held?
This year's supposed to be San Francisco.
GDC? Yeah, San Fran.
Yeah.
Ground zero.
Have to deal with hipsters and coronavirus.
Could have also been like a knock-on effect. Like, wasn't it Sony who at first cancelled, and then Google or someone else cancelled, and then just suddenly everyone's like,
"Yeah, because they got
Sony first, and then Microsoft did too, and then really it was just Nintendo that was left in terms of the big players.
Yeah. Sony may cancel just because it seems like they're on a cancel kick these days."
They're canceling everything. Well,
cancel culture.
Topic that
cancel culture. Yes,
doesn't sound like they have a whole lot to show right now.
Look, they know that the PS4. Oh, actually, the effect on the game industry, if the coronavirus keeps going up, it may actually affect the production and price of certain next gen consoles.
And game, like production of games in general.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've already seen a couple of things affected. The Animal Crossing Switch and Ring Fit Adventure production in China.
Mm-hmm.
Outer Worlds for Switch?
Please as well. Yeah.
By Outer Worlds, that was directly affected.
It ended up being a good thing, though, because I'll make a physical version of it, so yay. But of course, I'm not saying yay, coronavirus.
That's lovely.
Yeah, yeah, they're dealing with it well. They're doing.
Wait! They're making a physical version because.
Well, they're delaying it, and to make up for the delay, they're making a physical version as well. So.
They shouldn't be any delays associated with the digital version. I don't understand. Like,
aren't the developers in China themselves?
Yes, the developer, the porting people are in China.
Yeah, so it has affected the development of the game, and so because they have to release it a bit later because it won't be finished, they say, okay, now we have a bit more time, we'll do a physical game.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, but I think as far as digital game delivery goes, I think it's going to be a real boon to the gaming industry. Like when you see those shots of the Huabei province in China, where there's 10 million people live and no one's outside on the street, everyone's locked themselves in the house, I mean, there's not going to be much else to do but play video games.
And yeah, you still have a lot of digital options
if they're allowed to.
Because I was recently in Japan, and you could everyone's lives there are sort of miserable enough. Like Tokyo is just the bleakest, grayest city you go to, and that's why a game like Animal Crossing is so popular.
That surprised me.
Combine that with people self-quarantining and being afraid to go outside. Like Animal Crossing: New Horizons is probably going to be the best-selling game.
That's great timing ever. With that.
It is, yeah.
Conspiracy. That's why Nintendo delayed it. They made coronavirus, and now everyone's inside. They have to play it. It's
coronavirus is a Nintendo conspiracy to sell more copies of Animal Crossing.
Because that's like, as you just be dreaming of, wouldn't it be nice to go outside and tend to my flowers and stuff and see my friends, but you can't do it now, so you just have to play Animal Crossing, I think.
Well, to be honest, Brad, there's also going to be people like, oh, I wish Isabelle were real. That kind
of
shit.
Of course. But, they were going to buy it anyway, but I was going to be even more interest.
they're the people who summoned it with, all the Animal Crossing cards in a circle, just doing the whole ritual.
there's Amiibos people bought for $3 and now, really valuable. Just because they believe in the power of Tom Nook.
Just buy an Isabella plush and you'll be fine.
No. Oh, okay. Yeah, a plush. Fine. All right.
What were you thinking, Gag?
On that note of playing games during, while being quarantined in China, there's a lot of people who have been ordering Ring Fit Adventure because they can't go outside and exercise. And so price of that game has tripled. It's pretty much sold out, but, it's just become a really high value game because mainly in China, a lot of people are ordering it just so they have something to do inside. Yeah, exactly. And so that's a notable effect.
It's slowed because it's make more.
It's a real tough spot. Yeah, demand has gone up. Production is slow. That's not a good combination, but it's an observable.
It's not an artificial shortage.
I hope they're not believing the rumor that if you play Ring Fit, you can stave off the coronavirus. Because that rumor is not true. Stop buying it because of.
I think it's people imagine you normally exercise every day, and then suddenly you're told that you got to stay inside for a few months. Then you would sort of get really itchy to exercise.
Yeah. Especially to a lesser extent with games like Ring Fit, but I think gaming industry will largely be unaffected, I think, by coronavirus. Stocks are falling all around the world, but people are still going to have to do something while they while they hide indoors. So yeah, I think invest in gaming stocks now. That's a financial tip from me right now.
I'm a bit worried about component prices because that stuff will affect production of hardware.
I'm worried about actual material production as well as
prices going up. Invest now. Buy.
And manpower production too. If more people get sick, it's going to affect developers, and then they're going to close down studios temporarily while they're in quarantine, et cetera. It's a worst case scenario, but it's still a scenario that has to be thought of.
And actually, I mean, like, Bill, we're having a bit of a laugh now, but, you know, the first person in my city died of coronavirus today in Perth. And, I mean, how seriously should we be taking it? Like, is this the next Spanish flu, or is it just going to be more like SARS, where, like, it is bad, but, you know, ultimately we fight it off?
It's,
I think more people died of the coronavirus now than SARS, man.
Okay.
Well, the thing is that international travel is even more popular now than when SARS came into being. So that is the problem that we're facing now, is because of that. So it's going to be more widespread. It's impossible to really tell just how long it's going to last, but I mean, just going off of past estimates and data, I mean, it could be around for a couple more years. So yeah, I mean, we can't just put the economy on standstill, but at the same time, it's like, so that's why really I'm hoping that they put lots of, like, everyone is putting resources into getting this vaccine sorted out and put into production if they can get one going. Because we can't just twiddle thumbs and all stay indoors for the next couple of years.
Yeah. I did watch that Seinfeld episode today, the one where George is trying to move into a new apartment, but the apartment complex are saying, no, we're giving it to this old man who survived like a cruise ship disaster. And I did, you know, did think back to that cruise ship in Japan when a few people died of coronavirus, but as people point out, well, I mean, how many people would you usually lose on a cruise ship? Like 30 people anyway? Mm-hmm. Like the average age is about 85. And,
yes, cruise ships do have protocols on when one of their elderly passengers is a shuffle off the mortal coil.
Mm-hmm.
That part of it is just like this kind of keep them in like a sort of a little ad hoc morgue and just don't tell anybody about it. Like, hey, where's David? David, what's his name? He's sleeping. He's going to be sleeping for the rest of the cruise.
Oh no! Oh no!
Yeah.
All right. So that was a little bit of a downer topic.
So in terms of how it affects gaming, I think like immediately, like it's not going to stop people playing games. In fact, more people will be playing games and getting digital games right now. But you might see longer term effects from production and stuff like that at the very top, especially with the new consoles that is meant to come out.
Yeah, there's specific components that are probably very, like solid state drives, that are very likely going to be affected if this continues. Mm-hmm. And that's the ones that are being touted by the Sony and Microsoft as part of their new consoles. And that's kind of the linchpin. So if it may drive the prices up, or they're just going to have to take a loss. And I don't know if they can. I mean, they could probably absorb a loss, but. I don't know. Microsoft can't just have another console where they're losing a crap load of money on each one again.
Yeah. I mean, like, at the same time, do we really need new consoles right now? I mean, if they just delay it.
I don't know. I mean, remember Square Enix did say something like they don't see them making a new generation exclusive game until like far down the road.
Well, this is Square Enix, who take 5 years to make a game anyway, so.
I know.
That's not going to change anything.
So, you know, if you want to buy the latest Final Fantasy VII Remake installment, you don't actually have to get a PS5 to do it, which is, you know.
Yeah. To answer your question, Grub, like, whether new systems are needed, Sony and Microsoft need new systems. Whether everyone else wants new systems, obviously no, but they want new systems.
Yeah.
Just based off of, you know, their current generation system sales, and they – definitely,
I guess they're losing momentum compared to the Switch.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting how everyone, like Nintendo included, has been incredibly silent. It was like the most silent that the publishers have been, like in a
that's upcoming a good
point. Generation year. That it's odd that Sony and Microsoft are being so silent. I mean, we're already. It's March now. Like I'm just looking at my right after midnight. This is March 1st into March, and we haven't heard jack from. We've heard the most from Microsoft, but it's still not that much. Sony has really been incredibly silent. Again, the theory is that because they're trying to bring down the price of their system, so it's not a $700+ boondoggle.
Yeah,
yeah, that seems like it's also it wouldn't fly if they tried to sell it for $700+. It would just completely right. bomb.
You'll work two jobs to get it.
I'm sure they want it to be 500, and they're probably having troubles getting it to that price. And then Nintendo has just been incredibly silent, which is so weird because they've always had a January direct for the last 6 or 7 years or something like that. So it's
yeah. January, February.
We have seen like specific directs, like news about
it was the Animal Crossing direct
and Animal Crossing.
Right,
they're making this game.
Not a general.
It's pretty. We haven't had a good timing for them to have Animal Crossing because they can sort of focus on that, and maybe if they did have a big direct planned, that's.
It's like, yeah, but it's like not everyone should. I personally think every gamer should be playing Animal Crossing, but the reality is that not every gamer likes Animal Crossing.
Good thing
not
we have Doom Eternal coming on the same day.
but that's my point, is that like usually that generalized direct would exist for those other people. So it's hard to say if it's because of the coronavirus stuff, because obviously it's a bigger headline. It's a bigger headline in Japan that closing schools for a month than their Nintendo Direct. So they might just be waiting for that. It could be that they're waiting for Sony. They're waiting to hear Sony release stuff on PS5 because they don't want to release their information. Then it's like, oh, Sony's like, yeah, look at our PS5 stuff now. Woo!
So Nintendo's strategy at E3 has always been to go last. So you just get that really happy ending.
They're the last thing talked about, the freshest thing on the mind.
Yeah.
So I just imagine that Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony are all like at a poker table, and like none of them are putting down any cards at all.
So the console just release in a week.
Nintendo is the one that's in the better position because the Switch keeps selling. People keep buying games for it.
They have games that are coming
out. They're not really facing much of a problem.
And I'm not saying that they're resting on their laurels. They don't have to announce anything they're doing right now.
And the thing with Nintendo, like in the last 10 years or so, they have a pattern of sometimes they announce a game and it's just going to be out next month. Like they're really good at doing that.
Yeah, one of the best games last year? My game, the Astral Chain. We didn't even know about that until like February or something.
Yeah, that was in the February direct.
It was announced and launched within five months and was a surprise hit game for that year. And that's a good strategy because it sort of, to put it in
also
like
the Patriots game of the year.
Yeah, it's at least one of them. it sort of knocks, like there's a lot of the game industry that's sort of set, like a lot of wheels are in motion for like years, half decades and stuff. And Nintendo is the one that I see always comes out with like, oh, by the way, Tetris 99. Here, have this. And it's like, it's a 3-minute, and all of a sudden it dominates and talking points to talking about stuff for the discussion for about like 3 months. And I'm sure there was a game that was coming out that had 2 years of marketing behind it that lost to Tetris or something.
Yeah, although to be fair, like you couldn't really excite people with a trailer for Tetris, could you? You just have to release it.
Yeah.
But like, I think this might be the least number of games that we know that are development at Nintendo in years. Outside Animal Crossing, obviously, there's Xenoblade Definitive Edition. There is Breath of the Wild 2. There's Bayonetta Metroid 3. Prime 4 and Bayonetta 3. That's five games, three of which we don't even know if they're coming out this year. The only ones that we know are coming out are Animal Crossing and Xenoblade.
I think that'd be the most significant role
if you want to count Wonderful 101, I guess. Nintendo published, but
it's not exclusive though. They're not publishing it. So I'm talking about just Nintendo published titles.
The slowdown sort of across the whole industry. I mean, it was the other day when Infernal shared with us, you know, EA's upcoming games list, and it's just one. It's just Command and Conquer remastered.
But it makes sense.
There was a platform that didn't cost so much to develop for. I want that existed somewhere. I'm sure want to present itself at some point.
I never heard of a
EA
platform like that.
Is still holding their grudge against Nintendo. So
if they're not, they're just stupid. I mean, because it's like they get asked about it every shareholder meeting. Hey, you guys thinking about supporting the number one system for 2 years in a row? You think about that? And they're like, well, we'll support it when we think we have a game to support it.
Uh-huh.
We like what Nintendo's doing, all that like kind of boilerplate. We like what Nintendo's doing. It's been a success. We like their role in the industry, but we're also not going to support it ever. And fuck you for asking. So that next question.
we'll support it when we can revive my garden.
Well, it's kind of hurting them right now, especially in Japan, where like Switch is like pretty much the only console that's selling at all. It's so much further ahead.
That doesn't bode well for the PS5 either, because the PS4 was, even the Wii U was beating the PS4, and the only time the Wii U lost to the PS4 was like 2015 when Nintendo was like, we give up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that only now does the PS4 even get close to like what, 7 million with the PS4 and PS4 combined? And the Switch passed through that in like a year and a half. So like the PS5, I don't think it's going to sell more than that. I'd be pretty surprised if it does.
It's hard to imagine having something that PS4 didn't have. Like, how are they going to, like, unless they somehow make a handheld hybrid, but that's hard to imagine.
I mean, that's something. I think they get a revolt to their own fans if they did that. Because, like, oh, we're supposed to be the hardware kings. Graphics means so much. People tolerate games like the Order 1886.
I predict PS6 will have the handheld component to it. Because at that point, I think we're thinking again.
It would just be easy like enough by then.
Yeah, 7 or 8 years down the road, mobile technology, like the gap between them is going to be so small that I think Sony would have no choice but to try and go the handheld route as well.
I think by then Nintendo might even be trying the next thing. So,
oh yeah, definitely. I mean, they could probably be doing the next thing sooner rather than later. If coronavirus has not put a damper in their plans, it all depends on hardware falling in place, prices coming down for certain things. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of tablet chips and mobile phone chips that are better than the PS4s right now, and there's mm-hmm. they could have some motion on that if they choose. Mm-hmm. The longer they wait, the better it'll be. So I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean they're in a good position. They have a lot of options. Well, so just keep pumping out games on Switch. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. So, is that everything everyone had to say about coronavirus and gaming?
I did eat some Chinese food last week. I'm kind of feeling pretty bad right now, actually.
The future is Stadia.
Dang it, damn it.
all right. You know what? After we're done with this podcast, we're quarantining Deg in the office for the next 3 months.
Well, I've been supporting our brave Chinese restaurants. So I've been eating as much as I can.
Well, on the topic of like infectious viruses, there is one game coming out that does look very interesting to me, and this is surprising considering the company's track record as of late not really impressing me that much. Resident Evil 3 Remake.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I haven't seen a whole lot in the game because RE3 was what I would think everyone would agree is one of the worst Resident Evil games. So talk about it and tell me why you think it's
what's better about it, because you know the RE3 was like the original game, like we need something for this year, we have like half the RE2 assets, let's quickly throw it together.
Funny story about that, something I learned about RE3 is that it wasn't gonna original oh shit.
Uh-oh, Matt.
Yeah, cut this.
Okay.
Got it.
Oh god damn it.
This podcast is now property of the CIA.
This is all your fault, guys. Okay, back where it was. Well, originally what was going to happen was the RE3 that we did get, that was originally going to be a Dreamcast game, but Sony, being historically pissy as they always were, said, hey, we still got a contract with you guys. You make a goddamn RE game for PlayStation. So after some executive kerfumpering at Capcom, they said, well, the next they had to basically split things apart. Code Veronica became the spinoff, and RE3 became the next major one. So I think part of that played a role in why it's so bad.
I think there were some good things about Resident Evil 3. One, I would say, is the environments. Like, compared to Resident Evil 2, you go outside a bit more and there's more variety.
That's true. But having played Resident Evil 3, the backtracking is a lot more insufferable in that one compared to, like, 1 and 2. Like, 1 and 2, it felt more natural. It didn't feel like a slog. 1 and 2
are very well designed.
Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like an absolute slog, whereas 3 did.
We've established 3 sucks. Why does the new one look better?
maybe that's more necessary to remake 3 than the others if it sucked. Yeah. Maybe they
it's going to be a more slightly more action-packed game. Well, I know some people will probably be off-put by that sound because a lot of people didn't like RE6. Understandable. But
don't think they'll go that far.
But this remake isn't being done within Capcom. It's being done by an external company, which by ex-Capcom employees that worked on Resident Evil, like the old Resident Evil games. Free included, unfortunately, which might be a turnoff, but it's more action-packed. From the footage I've seen, it looks amazing. It sounds amazing, and it combines like the best parts of Resident Evil 4 without like the QTEs. And they did with Nemesis it looks really awesome.
Oh yeah.
Nemesis looks much more terrifying than he did in the original game.
I really enjoyed Resident Evil 2 remake. Just the gunplay was pretty good, and also Mr. X was like a taste of things to come for Nemesis. He was terrifying. And I think with this remake they have the ability just to make Nemesis incredibly scary.
Yeah, in the remake,
that was always my issue.
Go ahead, Bill.
Oh, okay, I was just saying that the Mr. X stuff was the most annoying stuff for me in RE2, and that's why I hated RE3. Was that that's the main gimmick of the game?
And they played on it even more
annoying stuff. Yeah, exactly. So hopefully, if they again with the remake, they don't have it just be obnoxious. If they can change some of that around, but that was really the whole concept of the game, so I can't imagine them changing it up that much. But we'll see.
Yeah, I guess pacing is going to be the key. Like, you don't want to spend the whole game running away from Nemesis.
Yeah, it would have to be more action-packed logically, because if you're in a city full of zombies, you're not going to be like, oh, I'm going down the street and I need to be, there's nobody on it.
Need some quiet time.
It does bother me that we're going back to the same city, though. I mean, it's natural to have a remake of 2 and followed up by 3. Still, we're coming back to Raccoon City again. When you could be going to Revelations Island with Barry Burton later on. See, that's a lot more exciting.
Trump Tower Lizard, man. Oh, God.
Revelations 2 was amazing.
I'm playing that right now, actually. I guess it's a good chance to talk about that. I just started playing it the last few days, and it's kind of nice just how it's way different to the mainline Resident Evil, or kind of like just the scenario. It's a completely self-contained island in Revelations 2, and Barry's back, and you have a few new characters. It's sort of nice that, like, if you're kind of sick of the Raccoon City story, you can just play that.
Yeah, it's almost an impossibility these days to play a Resident Evil game without a Redfield in it. I guess that's another reason RE3 looks pretty good.
Yeah, but Claire Redfield, she's very different in the Resident Evil 2 remake and Revelations 2. Just her entire character design feels different.
Yeah, if you unlock her original costume, she looks like a mom who really likes LARPing with her son.
Oh, God.
Or cosplaying with her son, yep.
I guess, would she be older in Revelations 2? I'm not sure.
Probably about mid-20s, early 30s, maybe. Probably flip a coin.
I think around early 30s.
Because Resident Evil 2 has that feel like Leon and Claire, they're getting in over their heads. They haven't experienced zombie outbreaks before.
They're a couple of kids.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Leon's a rookie. He hasn't learned how to suplex yet.
And they're not informed by 90s and 80s fashion, so Claire's no longer got the spandex-backed Daisy Duke cutoff jeans. Leon's got a big old wider butt chin.
Oh. With baby teeth.
Worse and worse with every incarnation.
That is one thing I'll say, these remakes. So the character designs are, I don't know if they're looking more realistic, but they're looking less, I don't know, I don't want to say good, but they're, you know, you could pick Leon Kennedy out of a lineup a couple years ago. These days, if you took his face and put it on something that wasn't a Jack Dempsey haircut, they'd be like, that guy from Gears of War. You know?
I think the most tragic thing is Leon doesn't suplex people anymore.
Well, he didn't learn suplex before.
Yeah, it took him a while. He had to go to some classes, get some martial arts lessons, and then
he had to lose his cheery outlook on life.
Krauser taught him in the Dark Side Chronicles. Remember, South America.
Yeah, I guess Platinum has got a lot of announcements they've been doing these days. One of which is good, which is the Wonderful 101 coming to Switch. And I think that's the extent of anybody actually caring about the Wonderful 101, because they could announce it for other platforms. I don't know if anybody's actually going to buy them on there, but
well, it's releasing in April, so with the RE3 remake and Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1.
People that would buy Wonderful 101 are going to buy it regardless. I don't think there's going to be someone that's like, I'm interested in this game, but I'm going to go buy Resident Evil instead. There's very few of those people.
It's actually a pretty good move. I'd say Nintendo's a pretty good guy on this one, because, you know, they could be like Microsoft and like hoard the IP of a company that, you know, they don't want to really fund it because it didn't do so well last time, but they're not against it, that like Platinum making it or something. So they're like, you know, look, you guys can go ahead and do it. You know, you can publish it yourself and all that. And it's pretty good of Nintendo to do this. And it's also pretty shrewd, because see, if it doesn't do very well, then Nintendo's like, well, see, we told you, Cam. Yeah, it's just, you know, your version of Pikmin is just it's just a bit too much for these people to take. You know, it just didn't do very well. But if it does well, Nintendo still actually has half the copyright on this. They can say, wow, you guys are like Wonderful 101, huh? So Wonderful 102 is coming out on the Switch 2. And guess what? It's an exclusive line. Come and buy it.
Yeah, definitely is a game that you would want more people to play as possible. Because sometimes, like, you can't really get a good feel for it by looking at it. It's a game that once you play it, you start to get it. And yeah, it's going to be nice to get a bigger audience regardless.
Yeah, and it's also really good of Nintendo to do that, because they could be like Microsoft. Like the Microsoft, that I believe still has the scale-bound IP that Platinum is working on. And that means that Platinum is basically forbidden from even using a game they worked on, and they also can't like rub the, if it's too similar, they can't like rub the serial numbers off and just call it Dragon Man or something. Microsoft
would be a good thing. It seemed like Scalebound had like a lot of problems. It might be best for them to move on from that anyway. Well,
problems that were. But what I mean is, if Platinum ever wanted to do anything with that IP that they worked on, they had to ask Microsoft. And Microsoft is like, well, we're canceling it, but we also can't work on it because that's ours.
I'm sure they could just make it, you know, it's Dragon Game, you know, like, I mean, it's Scalebound. It's just a word.
Well, we don't know how litigious Microsoft is on that, but it really does. I mean, even the interviews about this Wonderful 101 are like, yeah, we really like that Nintendo helped us. Have we told you how much we like Nintendo today? I mean, it's like, it's those kind of interviews.
Yeah.
You know, it was great, Iwata. That was great, Nintendo. It's like...
Yeah, I think like also the Kickstarter was a good way to do it, because like now they've pretty much made money from it already. They're like, hey, do you guys want this? And like, I believe they smashed every Kickstarter goal. And then
Well, there was going to be an Xbox One stretch goal, but I haven't seen anything about that one.
No, I think that's another one of those things where demographic steps in. And to be honest, I don't even see the PS4 version doing very well. But it's like, you know, it's funny when demographics is something that's used against Nintendo platforms a lot, because they're like, the only people who own those are like, well, apparently during the Wii era, it was like pretty much everybody except 20 to 35 year old males. But now the demographics are working against the other platforms in some way, because I don't think the Xbox crowd is going to buy a colorful game about Japanese tokusatsu heroes. They just made a decision that, look, it's the Xbox is a non-factor in Japan. It's on the downslope everywhere, and they like to buy first-person shooters. So now demographics, we don't think they're going to buy this kiddie game about comic book heroes, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, well, you have other platinum games on Xbox like Nier Automata, and there's like a certain platinum games Dark Souls audience who should be able to appreciate the depth of combat in Wonderful 101. But as you said, I think like the visual style might.
I don't think Nier Automata actually did that well on the Xbox. You want my? I think I'm about to go look that up, but it didn't. It was one of those things. It's one of those things where they announced it and it was like a shock announcement, but then nobody went and bought the game because they're just too busy playing first person shooters and the loot boxes for first person.
Good for you, Grub. Good for you. I commend your decision.
So yeah, I can confirm that 100% of sales in my household are the Xbox version of Nier Automata. So that's.
It's a deserving game.
Just a sample size you can extrapolate.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully it gets ported to future platforms,
like a future Switch.
Yeah,
especially if the Nier franchise continues.
I remember the dev team said that they'd port it to the SNES if they could. If they'd ask it, we put it on the SNES.
They could. I'd like to play that. That would have a nice.
That would be kind of cool.
Layer to it.
That was in response to whether they ported it to the Switch or not. So,
why would Square on the topic?
Yeah.
Actually, Square is one of the better Switch supporters right now. I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah, I know.
The other announcement was Kamiya is now directing a new game. Which will be self-published by Platinum Games.
I did see the trailer for that. It looked interesting. It was like a CG trailer, basically, though, just showing the concept. It seems to be like this giant Godzilla-type creature terrorizing a city, which is like very Platinum Games looking.
Yeah. Well, Kamiya is really heavily inspired by tokusatsu shows like Ultraman and the like. So, interesting to see what that turns out. The other announcement, the third announcement so far, is that they have a studio in Tokyo, which I don't know why they're announcing, because I think that was announced like last year or something.
Oh, so what's this? Is this a new studio in Platinum Games with more people?
Yeah, they opened a studio in Tokyo.
So they can more closely work with their best publisher, Nintendo. I mean, they can more work on other games from other publishers.
The focus was games as a service.
That's the other report.
Really?
That's bad news.
That doesn't seem like Platinum's strength, because they make a lot of single-player action games.
Well, that's why you expand the company so somebody else works on it.
Oh, yeah, that does make sense. Yeah. So they can continue doing what they already do, but maybe get a bit
while
more
building their brand at the same time.
Revenue.
Yes.
Or, yeah, maybe just brand awareness.
Sort of like how Nintendo opened up like a small branch for just their mobile division. Like, so it's like, yeah, we're going to have you guys do this so we don't have to do it.
Yeah, the mobile, like just having a presence on mobile, I think Nintendo a lot with Pokemon and now Animal Crossing.
And Fire just Emblem, which is surprising me by being one of its better earners.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, a lot of people are invested in Fire Emblem Gacha experience. I don't know much about it, but
because it's a good combination of you have a hardcore fan base and the type of game it is.
You have lots of unique characters in Fire Emblem, spanning like 16 games.
Yeah, that's where the most of the sales come from, or from those, again, the hardcore Fire Emblem base that is buying the Gacha stuff.
But you know, there's a bit of a strategy game underneath it, and it's not bad. But yeah, it's making its money from the lottery, the gacha lottery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just the way mobile is. Fun. I mean, Nintendo did put out a game that was like a game, and they were accused of like, you know, ripping people off because it, you know, they asked them for, would you please put money, like, could you pay a price for it? And you know, it's like, oh, are you ripping us off? Are you like, okay, then for free to play, yeah. It is.
Nintendo's tried a few different models for their mobile. That like Mario Run had the one time thing, and then everyone was like, oh, would you expect us to pay for
game? Pay money? And then... they're supposed to give us free. We're entitled for entertainment. Don't you understand? I said, yes, we understand. There's a free game where we're going to nickel and dime you like you want, I guess.
Yeah. And they also have like the more microtransaction approach with other games. So like they've sort of done sort of research on mobile. They've done like every strategy you can do.
Yeah, if microtransaction.
It's a shame they got blowback from the good strategy, like the Mario Run one, because that's an honest way of selling a game.
I know, yeah.
And it's something that might not work on the platform.
Yeah, it's the shareware. All right, model.
Guys, I'm out of Dragon Air. I need to get some more, so
pick us up. I
go into withdrawals.
I guess I'll be staying here this time.
Deg, you are getting locked up in the bathroom. We'll send food every week.
Yay, I have a roommate.
Matt, do you want to get coronavirus? Stay too,
yeah. You guys can play Snack World in the bathroom.
You already has it.
That's okay. I made my apartment in the ceiling.
Snack World in the bathroom sounds like a chuckle.
You're going to be locked up like genies.
Oh, God. Why can't
they have that cute...
together.
Can't they have that cute little... can they have that cute little green plant? That can keep me alive.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, what? Little, sure, we'll get one for you.
Green the little plant. Green plant sprite.
Oh.
The first one you get.
You need more snacks than that.
Flow. Yeah.
She can keep me alive. She can keep me alive while I'm stuck in the studio.
Well, right. Remember, you can't come to the bathroom, so you better hold it till we have another podcast.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, just hold it for until next week, right? We'll be back next week.
Sure, next week on Mercury or something.
We'll be back next week. We'll be back next week.
Next week in Game
Shops.
See you guys.
We will have our next podcast.
See ya.
We're going to wrap up there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And check out Wonderful 101 when it comes out if you haven't played it, because it's good.
Yeah.
Please do.
And
bye, Wii U.
See you next time.
Bye. Thank you.